Hello and welcome to the Sound Football Podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Trying to forget what we got up to during lockdown. It was a weird time, wasn't it? People were like sat at home, you know, far too much time on their hands. Not a lot of football going on, was there? And so one of the things about lockdown was we actually got to speak to our friends, meeting people in things like, what was it, hangouts, wasn't it? And a house party. That was, and everyone had their own little one that they preferred to use, wasn't it? And Teams was there. Well, Teams was just coming out. No one was using Skype. Well, except us, because we're old.
We were.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because we kept doing the podcast.
Yeah.
Skype's been our, what we've been using for years now. So yeah, we carried on using Skype. Good old Skype.
Just having video chats and just like connecting with people. And of course, you know, it was troubling times, wasn't it, Jan? People could feel like they could share stuff and like open their hearts, because it was all worrying times, wasn't it?
It was very worrying. So you had to reach out to people using technology, but technology, Grim, is a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Well, it can be, especially if you've got twats on your groups. Twats who record what you're saying at a vulnerable time and then probably sell it to the Sun 4 years later or whatever. I don't know the details of this. But Terry, someone has released some footage from one of these conversations between friends from a few years ago involving a referee. And it's become quite the stir on social media, hasn't it?
You could say that, a bit of a stir. I mean, you know, Twitter is no longer a thing. So the stir has broadened out a little bit. I'm not sure whether or not it's a Threads thing. I'm sure it probably is. It's even moderately blown up on my Blue Sky feed, which still, you know, despite everything, is mostly tumbleweeds. So, yeah, it's a big thing now. It's David Coop, who was recorded saying some unsavoury things about Liverpool and about Liverpool's manager at the time. And that's now been published, and he has been suspended, and all hell's breaking loose.
It is, isn't it? Because now, of course, because Liverpool fans have just woken up to the fact that maybe David Coote had something against Liverpool. So they're busy racking their brains to think about if there was ever a time that David Coote maybe made a 50-50 decision against them. I mean, I'm sure they'll probably laugh it off and go, oh, you know, it was troubling times back then. And come to think of it, that Jurgen Klopp is a bit of a cantankerous character at times, isn't he? Maybe it's just in the moment. They'll just laugh it off. You're not going to replay those games. That was 4 years ago, isn't it? I'm sure they're taking it in their stride, aren't they? That sounds like the sort of thing that Liverpool fans would do, isn't it?
I'm sure they definitely won't go on about it all of the time.
Forever.
Terry, is there any sort of feeling about what a certain section of very online Liverpool fans are doing right now?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I do try to keep my distance between the very online football fans these days. Since I quit Twitter, I found that my mental health has improved immeasurably in general. And I think a lot of that might be because I'm no longer subjecting myself to very online football fans. But I would imagine that they're trawling through various different instances. I think the one against Arsenal from last season or early in the season was brought up. And yes, it is, as you say, they would almost certainly be seeing this as a vindication of their claims that referees in general, and particularly David Coote, are having in for Liverpool and don't like Liverpool. And to be fair, the footage is pretty damning, actually. I mean, you know, I'm sure it's to a degree taken out of context, but nevertheless, you know, it's pretty clear that David had some strong opinions to express about Liverpool and about their former manager.
Mm.
They're going to be tough to walk back from.
I think it's perfectly within context, actually, because he was talking about a game where he was refereeing, which happened to feature Liverpool. So I think he was very much talking in context, and he probably deserves what he's getting, to be honest with you. Silly, silly boy.
Well, yes. The upshot of it is don't trust people that you're talking to aren't going to be recording you and then selling it to tabloids or just releasing it out there for everyone to see. But are we really expecting referees not to have opinions about the people that they're coming into contact with? And if they're asked within the confines of a conversation what they think of someone, have they really got to be on all the time? Have they really got to be on as if, well, you've got to treat every mic like a hot mic, obviously. But I don't think he said anything about Jurgen Klopp there. All right, apart from the fact of being a German cunk, maybe maybe that was going a bit more xenophobic than you really needed to. Maybe underlies a bit of unconscious bias or pretty semi-conscious bias there as well. But are we saying that these guys have to be robots and must be completely devoid of any emotion from the game and actually just turn themselves off from it at the end of it?
Yes and no.
Yeah, of course.
Jürgen Klopp has a history of being difficult, particularly with referees, all the way back to when he was at Mainz. He's always been a prickly character. And if you work with him and are on the end of that and the receiving end of that, you can probably develop some quite pointed opinions of your own about him as a referee, I'm sure. And indeed, in turn, then entitled, I would say, to perhaps express your frustration in a certain way. A xenophobic way, I think, is not acceptable. But in the privacy of your own home or in your own mind, you know, or amongst a close circle of friends, one could make the argument and say, look, you know, I'm being massively off the record here. I'm just venting spleen over someone that I don't have a great deal of time for. But the other side of that is that he's a professional referee. And as a professional, if you are having a conversation, particularly if it is being recorded, if it's sort of happening online or if it's basically being recorded, then I think there's some wisdom in thinking, no, the professional approach here is to moderate your language in such a way as to perhaps express some frustration with having worked with Jürgen Klopp or with Liverpool or refereeing Liverpool games in the past, but to do so in such a way as to not be offensive, not be xenophobic, and not get yourself fired. And that is the professional response. That's the professional way to do things. In not just professional referees, in any profession, you act professionally. It's like that, which David Coote has clearly not done. And that's one of the reasons why he deserves everything that's coming to him.
Well, of course he does, Jan. And he is going to get everything that he deserves. And that is a new job in the Saudi Pro League, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're xenophobic, Saudi Arabia will have no problem with that. If you've got a terrible reputation in your previous role, Saudi Arabia will have no problem with that. So he should be all right, and we'll probably earn a few quid out there.
Yeah.
Just to add to Terry's point there, I agree with it wholeheartedly, Terry. You're right. There is a yes and no answer to that. But I think that any role that deals with something so high level, football's incredibly high level, as you know, but if you worked in the legal profession or something, and you were to start talking about judges you've dealt with, clients you've dealt with, and things like that openly like that, then that would cause you immense problems, and rightly so, because you should be bigger than that. You should realize that your role carries a certain amount of importance, and that the people that you work with, regardless of what you think of them, should be protected. The conversations you have with them and the interactions you have with them should be protected. And he's clearly breached that in this conversation with his friends on a video call, which is just like, that's just mental. He shouldn't do that. He's got a very high profile role. He's paid very, very well for what he had a very high profile role and he was paid very well for what he did. And so therefore there's a certain expectation, you know, if either of us were working in a profession, you know, like I said, the law, and someone said to you, Terry, how was your week at work? You're not going to go start spouting off about how awful these people that we may well know have said and done. Yeah, it's really unprofessional. And you're right, Terry, to your point, it shouldn't be done.
These are the kinds of things that you would say, Graham, if you were getting home from work after a long day at the office and unwinding and venting a bit of spleen to your family, to your missus or to your partner or something like that, wouldn't you? You know, you can imagine that in that kind of context. You think that perhaps that's understandable to your nearest and dearest, but not to just a bunch of random. I mean, what it does is it suggests a lack of professional standards of ethics in the refereeing profession. And this perhaps is because, relatively speaking, it is still a young profession. I mean, football referees have been professional for, I want to say, 25 years,
something like that. Yeah.
In context, that's quite young, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is still evolving, you would think. And it doesn't really have a lot to go on either. It doesn't really have a lot of things that it can look at. It's got to look outside of sport to get its markers and how people should behave. Of course, I was being quite flippant earlier when I was saying about how people should be able to say what they like in a personal conversation. He can't, because he is meant to be a professional. And he's meant to be at the top of his tree. He's meant to be one of the best referees in the country. That's why he's there. And yet, he is still almost, let's say, showing off about the fact that he hangs out with celebrity football managers. Well, he doesn't hang out with them. He works with them. He has to work with them. And usually, I suppose, when he's a fourth official and he's having Jurgen Klopp glaring at him or shouting at him, then, yeah, he probably does think he's a bit of a dick. He probably thinks most of them are dicks. And when they're not being dicks, he probably doesn't trust them because why aren't you being a dick? So, yeah, I mean, let's face it. I mean, they probably all think that about all of the managers. But the fact that he said it, well, now you've got no credibility at all amongst fans, amongst anything. You may as well have said, yeah, I completely fixed the game once. Because that's what everyone else heard. That's what everyone else thinks now. It's funny what you were saying there, Terry, about Liverpool fans thinking about an incident in an Arsenal game. When I heard it was David Coote, I thought, we've had some right dodgy decisions from David Coote as an Arsenal fan. So Arsenal fans are going to come up with a whole litany of how certain referees are against them. And Liverpool fans will say how certain referees are all against them, probably from the same game as well. The fact of the matter is that we can overanalyze the referees far too much these days, and none of them have a chance. None of them have a chance, and they're not helped with VAR either. VAR just makes it even worse. And so we've entered into a situation where referees are just incompatible with the high-level, ultra professional football that we have these days. It's completely incompatible. It doesn't matter how much you pay the referees. It doesn't matter if you parachute ex-professionals into becoming referees either. That's not going to change, and it's not going to fix the problem, is it, Jan?
No, it's not. When they're professionalized and they formed their own little company to look after their interests, whether they like it or not, they have elevated their status. Well, maybe they haven't elevated their status. They've taken a step towards that themselves, but obviously the game and the way that it's gone has elevated their status. And the VAR thing, as you said, shines a light on them. It's a bit like what we were talking about last week when we were talking about directors of football. You know, the names are becoming more prevalent and people are aware of them a lot more. And that, I suppose you could argue that referees' names have been a bit more prominent for a longer period of time. But because there's such a focus on them, because officiating has got a light shone on it because of VAR, they're going to be in the spotlight, which means that their behaviour on the pitch and off the pitch has to be spot on, Graham. Otherwise, you're right. Every single football fan will now be going, well, you can't trust these referees. Just look at what David Coote was saying. They're all like that, aren't they? And as well as that, just on technology, this is a man who's paid to have eyes in the back of his head and he should be able to spot things, but he couldn't spot the little note at the bottom of the screen saying, this is being recorded.
And he's a VAR as well, so he should be quite savvy with the tech as well, shouldn't he? That's opened up another can of worms, isn't it, Terry? But yeah, is this whole thing about, what's the word you came up with? Celebrification?
Celebrification, yeah. Of referees, that is, yeah.
Is that what's happening here? I mean, like, are we expecting like David Coote's face to be spread across gossip magazines next week as shock, four-letter, outraging rant from Dave Coote about Klopp? Is that where we are now? Is this him now? Is he going to be on Loose Women next week?
Well, you might have a bit to go to get onto Loose Women, but you know, I mean, that's the creme de la creme, mate. You know, more like Jeremy Vine, perhaps, something like
no,
that.
No, I know. He's going into the bloody jungle, isn't he?
Yeah, that I was about to suggest, because we haven't had a referee go into the jungle yet. My betting was on Mike Dean. I reckon that the jungle get applications from ex-referees all the time to get on there. I reckon Jeff Winters tried to get on there. I certainly reckon Howard Webb's tried to get on there. To be serious, and I've said this before and I stand by it, I think that there is a strand of referees at the top level who I think have developed ambitions that go beyond being a good referee and think about what they're going to do with their career after they're finished. Because like players, you know, they retire relatively early in their careers and they've got to figure out what they're going to do next and make up the shortfall in the loss of income that they're going to get. They can't all go on to run the PGMOL. And indeed, they can't all go on to get nice jobs at Sky or TNT or ITV. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there is a possibility that referees will use their high profile to promote themselves. And I think that there's a problem there because I think, generally speaking, referees are supposed to be, I would suggest, cool-headed and arbitrators and mediators and officials. And they're supposed to be able to cool-headedly officiate very, very highly emotional, very high stakes professional football matches. And I think that sometimes the ambition to perhaps increase your public persona outside of that can cause a conflict and cause some problems. That doesn't necessarily warrant some of the treatment that these referees get, by the way. I'm not suggesting that. And I'm also not necessarily opposed to the idea of referees seeking to make a living after their refereeing career is over. But at the same time, there's lines to be drawn and walked across here. And again, I think that a lot of it is because it goes back to what you were saying earlier, Graham, is there's no precedent. You know, this is still a young career. I mean, Graham, you and you're not quite as old as we are. You might not remember. You may remember, but we remember the debate about professional referees and whether or not referees should become professionalized. And it was like a VAR conversation was, you know, a few years ago before that came out. There's a crisis in refereeing. There's always a fucking crisis in refereeing, and there has been forever, you know, and that the best way to resolve it was to professionalize the referees because that way they would be more accountable. They did that. And I still would suggest to you that we still have a crisis of refereeing. We will always have a crisis of refereeing. Nothing's changed. I'm not suggesting it was a bad idea, but I'm not suggesting it's gone the way that we thought about it at the time.
Well, Jan, you used to work for a referee, didn't you? He was your boss, wasn't he?
Keith Haggart. Well, he was senior to me in the same organisation. Yes.
I didn't work directly for my boss.
I didn't work directly for him, although I did make his tea.
You did make his tea, didn't you?
You made his tea.
Now, I was very, very young. But yeah, you're quite right. He was a marketing director. So, you know, he had to work to make ends meet because they were getting paid a pittance back then. This was kind of what, late 80s, early 90s. I think, well, there's no doubt. I mean, given the description Terry's just given about the things that is expected of them, that is a nightmare job to have. I question the sanity of anybody who would want to be a referee. But then again, I suppose I should admire the kind of fortitude of people that do choose to do it, because the amount of grief that you get from your work colleagues, if you like, the people that are on the pitch with you, and then from tens of thousands of people actually watching you there and then, openly insulting you if you don't get it right, and then the media and everybody on the socials picking your performance apart as well. So it's incredibly, incredibly difficult. And I'm not for one second saying that that justifies what we were talking about with David Cooper. I think it's such a challenging role. I almost think it needs to be reassessed in some way, shape or form, because to expect one person to be able to carry that burden on the pitch. I don't know what the answer is, but I'm just saying that the amount of pressure you're putting onto individuals to be able to perform to the highest level to, as Terry said, try and keep a very, sometimes very volatile situation calm and try your best to be anonymous if you can and not really be there. You shouldn't really be noticed if you're a referee. The best referees, you wouldn't even notice them. But that isn't the case. And I suppose there is an argument going back to Coop. Has the game got to him? Was that outburst the result of, you know, stresses getting to him? Maybe a very difficult exchange with Jurgen Klopp. People break down because of what's happened to them in their work. And, you know, we talk about context there. And, you know, maybe I was being a bit flippant when I said, you know, it was quite within context. But we don't know what really has gone on, what the fallout of that was in that man's head. We don't know what the fallout of all of this pressure is on referees. And I think that maybe it needs a rethink because, one, you're going to struggle to get people into the profession. And we've seen that anyway. And the people who are in it, you're right, Terry, though I'm not sure how we prove this. But if you're in it, maybe you want to get out of it as soon as you can and be able to kind of feather your nest in some way, shape or form. So you've got a living once you're out of the pressure cooker. It is so, so difficult. We do need to have a bit of compassion for these individuals. It's difficult when it's your team or when you've seen a mistake or a decision that's so kind of, you know, you believe it to be so egregious that, you know, it riles you up. But these are individuals. We've seen what some managers like Mourinho have done in the past, where referees have been, you know, openly threatened on socials. And I imagine that Coote will be getting that today as well. And I worry, as I think we've said this before on the pod, these guys don't walk around with protection squads. You know, they'll be down Tesco's buying a pint of milk and some bread, and somebody will come up to them and tell them what they think potentially. And that person may not be in the best of health themselves. So the safety of referees, I think, is paramount. So I think that it's on the media and on media platforms to be careful about what is said about them.
Yeah, but putting a lot of heat under this story is going to do great for clicks, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah.
Because it's happened to Liverpool as well. It's even better. That means everyone's going to be clicking on that story, aren't they? And everyone's going to be talking about it on the podcast as well, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, we've been recording for 20 minutes on this, and we've still got more takes. We've still got more to come. It is great content. A refereeing controversy is great content, and this is absolute dynamite. But I think you're right. If it had been, let me see, if it had been, I don't know, David Moyes. Let's say we thought, no, that seems unfair. Why would David Moyes be such a... Let's think of, listeners, think of your preferred Premier League team and their manager, and imagine that it was them. And if you're a Man United supporter, maybe a Chelsea supporter, you know, then there'd be a big stink about it. But like if your team's West Ham or Palace, you know, Brighton, there's a good possibility that this wouldn't necessarily be the story that it is. It's the dynamite element of it is one, it's an incredibly inflammatory remarks that he's made, a senior referee, and against, you know, Liverpool FC, you know, arguably the one of the most popular football clubs on the planet. So, yeah, it's that perfect storm, and there'll be plenty of content to come from it. And I do feel a bit sorry for David Coote, although I think he was massively mistaken to have made those remarks, even remotely publicly, under any context. Massively, massively mistaken. But the shitstorm that's coming his way, I suspect, will way outweigh the crime, to be perfectly honest with you. The likelihood is he's going to lose his job, he's going to lose his income, and it's going to completely mess up his life. And that is enough, but yeah. It won't be enough. There'll be more. And in that respect, I mean, I would, I'm sure no one would listen to this, but I mean, I would hope that people would think about this. And the media have a role to play here as well, don't they? They could actually lower the tone of this a lot, try and imply in such a way to say, look, you know, this guy's made a big boo-boo, but it's now he's being investigated, he's been suspended, and we'll see what happens, and then actually probably seek to bury the story for the welfare of the individual who's likely to be punished enough.
Well, luckily he is the only referee under focus. I mean, it's not as if other referees are having chants sung by home crowds, isn't it?
Oh, wait.
No, wait. Yes, actually, I'm just rereading my notes now. Yes, both Anthony Taylor and Michael Oliver this weekend had variants of It's Not All About You sung at them. Yes, Michael Oliver, It's Not All About You. Anthony Taylor, It's Not All About You. One wonders who it is all about, but it's not about them anyway. But is that a level of status now amongst referees? If you're getting that sung at you, you've hit home. You've really got it. You've made it.
I suppose it depends on the levels of narcissism amongst the particular referees.
Well, it's got to be there, isn't it?
It's possible that some might well say that it's a badge of honour, you know, in the kind of, you know, well, I mean, if they're all coming at me, then I must be doing something right, kind of thing. I personally think it's menacing. I don't like that at all.
Yeah.
I can't sit here and say referees shouldn't seek to celebrify themselves and then be in any way supportive of that level of personal chanting. I think it's one thing, players, but even then... If a specific player is abused en masse, like, you know, called a wanker, you know, in the traditional wanker song, you know, of old, then Sky would have muffled that chant. But it was clear to hear, it was clear as a bell coming through.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are, they're the support staff, yeah. Right? They're the admin staff who are there to help make the game run. You know, so calling them out like that, I think one is creepy to begin with. On behalf of those fans, I think it's creepy and menacing, and I really don't like it. And I'm disappointed with the way in which it was covered as well. If they're going to muffle, and they frequently do, abusive chants on these calls, and I know they weren't swearing, but nevertheless, they were clearly targeted abuse. I thought it was nasty and reflects poorly on everybody, to be perfectly honest with you. Anthony Taylor, of course, is the guy who was attacked at Rome airport on his way back, not at Rome airport, wherever the Europa League final was held, at the airport after the game, him and his family were confronted by angry Roma fans. who arguably were stoked up by Jose Mourinho, who was aggressing the referee and the fourth official during the entirety of that final. That's the same Jose Mourinho who's just received a one-match ban and fined £15,000 for comments made after a game at the weekend criticising Turkish referees. There's an opportunity to learn from this experience, and that is that we need to chill the fuck out when it comes to referees, because otherwise something terrible could happen.
That Roma game, that's one where Jose was shouting at him in the car park, wasn't
he? Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you can giggle at it at the time, but looking back at it, the long lens of history, if you like, it is awful. And that guy could have been seriously assaulted and hurt in front of his family, which had been awful. And you're right. And that's what I was trying to get at before. You can rile up fans. You can rile up anyone. And it just takes one person that's not quite right that feels aggrieved enough to go and do something about it. You're right. We need to chill the fuck out. You're right. These guys are just officiators of the game. It's dangerous. And it's a dangerous path. And that's why I do think that, you know, and I will get my thinking cap on about what we should do, but it needs to be looked at because having, you know, all of the other, I mean, we were talking last week about how teams are run now and teams are run by squads of people. You know, there's a whole apparatus around them, from the sporting director right down to the physio and the scouts and things like that. Whereas, you know, the refereeing team's quite small, isn't it? Rather, the officiating team is quite small. I mean, there's three of them, four of them at the ground. And then if it's a top level game, do you have the Stockley Park guys there? But there's not many of them there to deal with this. And maybe you need more people there. I don't know what the answer is, but I think that just putting one person in the middle and expecting them to be able to put up with all of that shit and then all of the shit afterwards that they have to put up with, I think that's too much and that needs to be reassessed.
I've said in the past repeatedly, sometimes glibly and sometimes not glibly, that the last thing the game needs is more referees. Mm. I'm now beginning to wonder whether or not I should revise that thought. I mean, that is in the context of VAR normally. I think VAR, as you say, Graham, I think VAR is bad for referees because it actually undermines their authority. One of the cornerstones of the laws of the game is the referee's decision is final, even if it's wrong, especially if it's wrong. And VAR undermines that core value. Maybe, like, you know, the fourth official swaps with the referee at halftime. You get two guys refereeing one game, but one in the first half, one in the second. I'm literally spitballing here. I mean, like, I'm not thinking that through at all. That perhaps might take the heat out of a situation and just relieve some of the stress and the burden. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel that probably nothing more fundamental is required. And cultural as well, I think, as well, which is going to be even a harder thing to address.
Well, I think if they're going to be part of the show, make them part of the show. Make it all part of the great extravaganza panto that football is.
Well, like wrestling, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah, something where the refs are part of the show.
Because if you want this level of drama, of kayfabe nonsense around the game, then this is what you'll end up with, because this is what the media will think. This is what you want. This is exactly what you want. This is why VAR was introduced, because it was assumed that that's what the punters wanted. It was interesting what you were saying there, Terry, about when they didn't turn down the mics on the Anthony Taylor, It's All About You, or the Michael Oliver, It's All About You. What Sky went on to do almost immediately afterwards was cut to Mike Dean. So to get another referee's reaction on a decision about how he wouldn't agree with it as well. Mike Dean, one of the most... This is someone who has desperately tried hard to give himself a career after football. Now he's being paid perhaps even more money than he was earning as a referee by just spouting off his old crap on Sky Sports. He wasn't a very good referee. He wasn't a referee that I particularly enjoyed watching. I hated it when he was refereeing our games. And now I have to listen to him whining on about another professional's decisions. It's just ridiculous. But what I would say is, yeah, fine. I can envisage a time in 10 years' time where whoever is the next Mike Dean, it might be even David Coote, might be Ian, is there as an analyst, and you will have another ref warming up on the touchline after a referee's made a bad decision or the VAR's had to intervene. And then all of a sudden you've got another referee running up the touchline, warming up, saying, yeah, well, we've got Howard Webb at the Pigeon Earl. Right, we're zooming in on him now in the director's box and he's looking very worried and wondering whether or not he's going to get a substitute referee on, going to call time on this referee and get another one out there. I can see that happening. I literally can. I can see this is, and it'll all be part of the show. And there'll be phone-ins. There'll be phone-ins to say, should they swap over the referee now? Bet365 will be giving you odds on how long the referee will last into the second half before they have to change him.
I know you've gone to an nth degree there, Graham. So, I mean, but it does sound amazing. But I mean, the thin end of the wedge, or you know, the first step on the road that leads to that is when they pan to Stockley Park. As soon as there's a decision that's a contentious decision, the cameras are in the room. I mean, that is ridiculous. That shouldn't be happening. So then you'll see someone like Michael Oliver, and he's consulting with the two guys next to him. They've got all the television screens in front of them. That should just not even happen. Hmm? Because one, it's unfairly drawn attention to somebody who's got to make a decision, and bearing in mind the pressure on them now because they have to make a decision quickly because of VAR. And people get frustrated because they have to wait because they've insisted on a system where more than one person has to look at a decision, which is exactly what you asked for. But anyway, sticking a camera in their face is just clearly the wrong thing to do. And as well as that, to your point, Terry, you know, if you've got an individual there who wants to make a bit of a name for himself or herself, and then they've cut to Stockley Park, well, they've got a chance there, if they were so inclined, to make a decision to make a name for themselves. Not that I really think that there are many referees out there doing that. I haven't personally seen much evidence of that, but then, you know, I'm not saying that it doesn't exist. But I certainly think that is the wrong thing to do, to bring them in to be part of the TV spectacle. But you're right, where does it end, Graham? And I think you've just described a beautiful scenario, actually. I would hate to see the road to that point. But actually getting to that point would be wonderful, I think.
Well, it's going to be things like miking the refs up, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, I've seen that. I mean, it's the A-League, isn't it, who are doing that now. They mic the referees up and explain their decisions in the kind of NFL style. And I mean, I think that it's inevitable we'll see that. I'm not really a big fan of that, although I must confess when I saw it, I thought, oh, actually, he has actually explained that decision quite well. So I get up, oh, actually, that kind of worked. So I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think that I can try and be open minded. I think, you know, if you're going to bring referees into the circus, then they need to be remunerated in the same manner. That's the only thing as well. I mean, like, if that's how it's going to be, I mean, like, if they're going to be part of the circus, then they have to be part of the circus. They don't, you know, and I know they get paid quite a lot of money, but by comparison to players, and if you're going to start thinking about it in those terms, the worry is that the further and further we move towards that is the worry about the gap between the professional referees and the non-professional referees. And those are the people who we absolutely 100% rely upon for the grassroots of the game. And for the majority of football that's played on this planet is played with amateur referees. And so if referees are then treated like shit for not conducting themselves, in general, whether they conduct themselves professionally or not, again, what knock-on effect does this have on the grassroots? And we know that people at grassroots level, you know, players and assistant coaches will speak to referees in such a way, and not all of them, but some of them, I suspect, are actually aping behaviour that they've seen on the telly. Not all of them. Some coaches are independent-minded and clever people, but just allow their emotions to run away with them. It's possible we even may even know such a coach, but isn't gullible enough and shallow enough to be governed by what he sees on the television. But there are others who do. But there are others who do, and I'm not talking about this particular person. If you set a bad example, and if at the professional level you make it such a shit show, it will inevitably have a negative impact. I don't know, if I was a young man who not good enough to play football, but still wanted to be involved in the game, would you want to go be a referee? What kind of a person wants to do that kind of job? Where would we be? I mean, like, we're talking about, what, 1% of the football being played in this country? Less than 1% of the football being played in this country. The overwhelming majority of football played in this country is played at a grassroots level or below the professional level.
Yeah.
Between Saturday football and Sunday football, I mean, there's like thousands of games.
Yeah.
I was going to say countless games, but no, they're not counted. They are all individually counted. That's the point. That's why they have referees at them. All of them with referees. That's astonishing. Just think about how many thousands of games are being played every weekend for 9-10 months of the year, all of them refereed. I mean, it's amazing why that they do it. Why do they do it when that's the world that they get into? That's the grief, that's the abuse that they have to suffer. Why would you do it? I would walk away. So that needs to be thought about.
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
would be nowhere without these people. No. We would be nowhere.
No, and yeah. even down at the Sunday League level now, you've got coaches, because they all think they're on the pathway to becoming a Premier League coach. They've all got their VOs. You've got matches now that the guys are actually paying to play. And you've got a coach there who's spunked a load of cash on a VO so that he can watch his team play like cart horses, but also cut and splice all the refereeing decisions that go against them and put them up on social media. This is Sunday League. Sunday League, telling you what a shocking decision this was. This is the filtered down mentality, because you've got coaches who believe that they are on the pathway up to the top. They are reacting like they're going to be like these guys who are at the top, at the bottom. And they are treating referees exactly the same way as they would all the way along.
Yeah.
We go to non-league and we hear the referees getting dog's abuse because of decisions that they've made. And this is right down low. Not as low as it goes. There's plenty of football below that we've also seen. And the refereeing standards, that they are pretty, pretty poor. If you go there to see perfect refereeing, do not go there. If you can't sit at the top level, imagine what it's going to be like at step 12 or whatever.
My son, he doesn't play anywhere near that level. He's still playing at under-18s. But yeah. He was playing a game a couple of weeks ago, which was dull, so I turned and started watching a men's team game play. It was at the Met Police ground, actually. It wasn't Met Police, but it was anyway, someone was using those facilities. And this is how low it was. There was a proper official, proper referee there, but there were no linesmen. So the referee was doing his best to hold this game together, and the grief he was getting from coaches and players alike. And he's like, look, I haven't got linesmen. I made the best call I could on whether that ball went out, / that was offside, / it was a, you know, whatever decision. And there was not an inch given for that at all. And I was just thinking, what are you doing there? And actually, when my son's game got a bit more interesting, I could still hear it behind me. And I was thinking, this guy's still got like another hour of this to go. And to be fair to him, he played it all through. I never heard him raise his voice once. And he left the pitch and he hadn't had any kind of breakdown. I mean, that no doubt that game would have been in a league. But I mean, you're talking well, well below the non-league that we go and see. And it was crazy. I don't think it's just coaches. I think, this is the thread that's run through all of our discussions for many, many years about respect for referees. But I think that needs to be looked at as well with this, because I don't think it's one factor that's going to start, well, that is driving people away from it. Because referees are like bees, aren't they? Because if you don't have the bees, you don't have any food and we all die. And if you don't have referees, you don't have any football. So be nice to the referees.
Be nice to them until we can replace them with AI. Okay?
which is coming. Yeah. It's coming.
We never know. I mean, like, this whole thing could be a deep fake. I mean, like, if that comes out tomorrow before I've edited this, I mean, that's it. I'm going to... God,
we'll be back here tomorrow evening.
Yes.
Same time.
Yes.
Re-recording on a completely different subject.
I think this is the real thing. And let's face it, it's come out at the start of an international break, because there'll be bugger all else to write about. So.
Oh, God, yeah.
Very good point.
Oh, no.
Very good.
Yeah, it's going to stick around, isn't it?
It is going to stick around. And because it's an international break, we're having a week off the weekend box set. So you can go ahead and watch the internationals without having to read our opinions about it first. But we will be back. We will be back the following week with more about the games you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now! Come up with any answers, because there are no answers. Anyone that does come up with an answer is lying or hasn't thought the whole thing through.
No, there needs to be a top to bottom inquiry started by the FA. It's not three guys in the podcast on Monday evening. Anything we would come up with is just going to be trite.
Well, yeah, let's not go too far on that. I think three guys on a Monday night in a podcast can solve some of football's problems, especially VAR.
Only if we get to do it from Saudi Arabia for large pots of money.
This is true.
Yeah, very large pots of money.
All buried.
Yes. To be honest with you, I'd take a modest pot of money because I'm that cheap and corruptible.
It's a David Cootan Sound of Football Hour on
yes. Hi, David. Great that you joined us again this week.
Oh, yes.
Welcome. You're fucking welcome, he'd say.
You cunts.